If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Yo, what is good? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, April 25th, 2022. I'm your host, Janet Garcia, and joining me is Tim, motherfucking Geddes.
What's up, Janet? How you doing? How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. It was my brother's birthday on Friday. We did the birthday tradition, especially in the pandemic where we still haven't done a lot of like going out and doing a lot of things for birthdays since that's ongoing until the end of time. We just kind of stayed, and he worked that day too. It was Friday. So when he got back, like we ate some wings that my boyfriend made, watched some movies, which was dope because the movies that we watched were movies that I already had wanted to watch. So I was like, okay,
check shit off the list. I'm being productive.
Yeah, and partying. We watched Ford versus Ferrari, and like that movie was so good. That's like one of the best movies I've seen in a hot minute. So like watch that if you haven't. But what about you?
I also saw a movie. I went to theaters to see The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, for those that don't know, it's Nicolas Cage acting as Nicolas Cage, and he's put in a situation where he needs to use his knowledge of acting from the other movies he's been in to overcome problems, and it is utterly fantastic. I recommend it to anybody, Nicolas Cage fan, enthusiast or not, I should say, because I am not the biggest fan at all, and I say that in that I just haven't seen many of the classic movies. Like, people would be surprised. I have not seen Gone in 60 Seconds. Like, I have not seen a lot of the classics. I haven't seen Face Off. I haven't seen National Treasure. Like, I was going just kind of knowing him as a meme. You know what I mean? And this movie is so much more than that. And I feel like it delivered so much for me. I can't even imagine how much it would deliver to, what do they call them out there? The Cagies?
Oh gosh, Cagers? I hope not.
I don't know. Whatever they are,
the Cagers, you know.
Yes, like you guys need the imprisoned. Y'all need to 100% watch this damn movie because it is fucking awesome. And Pedro Pascal, oh yes,
Caged and Enraged. Here's a question for you before we actually like get into the show about that movie. Is it like dumb fun good? Like, what's the energy that I should expect? Because like Nicolas Cage, he is a meme, but like his repertoire is also like really vast in a way. So like, what is it gonna be, like a goofy fun time? Like, what's the vibe here?
It's more than that, but it's not like an art film. You know what I mean? But it's definitely not like a comedy, but it's very funny. Like, it's I would say that it is, like, it's legitimately a great movie. And it's not tied to knowing Nicolas Cage. Like, they set him up, even if you knew nothing about him and he was just a character in the movie, they did a really good job. They tell a really good story, and it's a lot of fun, and it's way more heartfelt than you'd expect.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down for that, because I watched, I guess I've been on a movie kick, because I watched, Free Guy finally, and I was like, oh, this is actually really good. So I feel like I'm in the era of movies that I think won't be that good end up being like pretty damn good. So I'm just gonna trust you on that one,
I'm happy you like Free Guy, because I feel like everyone wants to hate on Free Guy, and like it's, I get really it, there is a lot to hate on.
No, but like are you kidding?
It's a fun ass movie.
It was I was into it. I'm like literally can't name one gripe, can't name one flaw. Don't at me. But let's get into today's stories, Janet, which include PlayStation's push on PC, Raven Software's QA testers union election, the NPD, and more. Because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. We're each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Rerun you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or listen later on podcast services around the Globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and all Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be part of the show, head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in and silver members or above get the show ad-free along with the exclusive daily post show. Some housekeeping for you. Kinda Funny KFW April Anarchy pops off today. This is the Kinda Funny Wrestling pay-per-view that's totally free because I'm yes exactly on Twitch right here after KFGD. See Alana defend her title against Joey and Elise. Johnny Ace take on the Milk Mommy for the Kinda Funny Championship and more. If you miss it live, it'll be up later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames tomorrow. I'll tell you one thing, you know, that was one of those reads where I started, I didn't know where it was gonna go. It went in like a few different directions along the way, but I'm here for the energy.
Nailed it.
A big thank you to our Patreon producers Fargo, Brady, Pranksy, and Anonymous. Today we're brought to you by Brother Printers, Lumen Skin, and Razor, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We got four stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with Sony is hiring a senior director for PC planning and strategy. This comes from Jody McGregor over at PC Gamer. The article reads, Sony formed a PlayStation PC publishing label in 2021 and has brought plenty of formerly PlayStation exclusive games to PC, with Death Stranding, Horizon Zero Dawn, and God of War among them. Uncharted Legacy of Thieves collection is due later this year. This ongoing experiment has clearly done well for the company, and the latest sign of that is a job listing for senior director of PC planning and strategy of PlayStation Global. If you were afraid Sony's fling with PC gaming might prove brief, this listing is more evidence of it continuing long-term. Whoever gets the role will, quote, be responsible for the strategy and commercial activity within global channel sales and will deliver a single optimized PC sales growth and commercial plan to hub and territory teams to implement. I expect that plan will need to be something a little more involved than put Bloodborne on PC already. Bringing already popular games to PC is a strategy that's worked for Sony so far. God of War was Sony's biggest PC launch, but Horizon Zero Dawn also sold well and Days Gone respectively. There are plenty of other big budget action games on the console still waiting to be ported over. Honestly, Bloodborne can wait if it means getting Spider-Man into the hands of modders any sooner, but presumably Sony's plans will go further than that. Simultaneous releases of future games will be an obvious next step once the backlog of prestige exclusives has been worked through. The question is, would brand new games be released on Steam, Epic, or potentially a PlayStation launcher? A kind of PSN for PC, perhaps cross-save, share trophies. Given that Bethesda just announced the shutdown date of its launcher, maybe Sony's new senior director of PC planning and strategy will read the writing on the wall there. Tim, react.
There's a lot here. I think that at the end of the day, this is only a good thing. We've already seen some great ports of iconic PlayStation titles, specifically from the PS4 era. And as we move into this PS4 cross PS5 moment that we're in, and we're seeing this kind of continue, this builds towards potential day and date on PC and PlayStation could be really exciting. I don't know that that's where they're actually going to head, but I do think that they are trying to test the waters for it all. It's funny with the slant of this article, poking fun at the whole Bloodborne thing. I think Bloodborne on PC is going to be a much bigger deal to that group of people than this article is kind of leading us to believe. And I know they're just having jokes there, but I do think that it is that multi-pronged strategy of that hardcore people that want to just mod the hell out of it for one reason or another of like the Bloodborne community. But then the same thing for something like Spider-Man, which I'm sure has a lot more legal loopholes you get what I'm saying.
Legal hoops to jump through.
Hoops to jump through.
You're
that's
like,
what I was
there's
going
hoops,
for.
There's hoops. There's loopholes. In yes. Opening doors, doorways yeah. of some portals, you know, whatever it could be.
Ton of stuff getting in the way there. But I imagine that is obviously something that they want to do. And when you look at the games that they have released on PC so far, it does kind of tell a story, right? And especially now as we're getting the thing here, in case we missed it, the Uncharted games coming out. We have the date for the Thieves Collection, which is coming in June to PC. It's kind of like they're getting a lot of the bigger classics on the PC. I'm most interested in the second half of this article here, kind of talking about the launcher. Will PlayStation have its own dedicated PC launcher, or are they going to continue to partner with Epic or Steam here and there or wherever it is and just get the game in as many places as possible? I think there's pros and cons to both sides to it. I think that the obvious pro to the PlayStation launcher would be trophy support and getting the entire ecosystem tied together in a way that Microsoft has already done because of just the way that they've built out their entire ecosystem from the get-go. But there's obviously a lot of people out there that care about trophies and care about their PSN profile and all that stuff. But I wonder if it's worth alienating the potential of like the exclusivity of Epic or Steam or whatever it is on the platforms, or if they're just going to kind of do it a little bit everywhere.
Yeah, I think the trophies thing would be huge to be able to have that, as well as like, you know, the cross save element. That's definitely something that, as you mentioned, like Xbox has spearheaded, and they kind of like were built for success in that regard by design, because it's ultimately like a computer company. So it makes sense that they have such like a down packed PC integration. I don't really see them making their own launcher. I think it does, you know, as this article kind of points out, with like struggles from other companies that try to make their own launcher, it might be more work than it's worth. And I think generally too, until the tides start to turn, which who knows if this will ever even happen, like I feel like PlayStation still has its core identity of you play PlayStation things on PlayStation platforms. And even like having the port element, I think that's kind of a, hey, we have this on PC to help bring you over to PlayStation. Like, you want trophies, it's over on PlayStation. You want to feel immersed in the like, hey, we have a place for you to do that here, and that is our consoles. And I feel like that's still ultimately the bread and butter. And even this is a way to create that funnel, right? That's why I don't see us seeing day and date. I think the day that we start seeing like big deal day and date stuff either on PC or even just you know, there's a lot of talk about like PlayStation's revamped PS Plus system and like the day and date potential there, like I think we're still pretty far away from that. And if we see that kind of stuff anywhere, it would be more on like a PlayStation centric service than I think on PC. Especially because I think with the PC stuff, we're seeing, again, the big hit stuff is there, the things that, but it's also late. So it's stuff that will funnel people to PlayStation ultimately, where it's like, hey, I finally played God of War. I don't want to miss out on, you know, this, it's funny to say sequel because it's like such a long running franchise, but the next installment of God of War. While on, like, as far as the day and date conversation with PS Plus, it's a lot more of, hey, maybe we won't see, you know, the new God of War day and date, but we might see like this indie game that would have came to like PS Plus now being rolled in here, or that being day and date. So I still think we're sort of far away from that. But what, how do you feel overall with like PlayStation's rollout on PC? Are you, you know, happy with that? Do you like, are you have like an any investment in it? Like, are you looking to replay or play those games on PC for the first time?
Oh yeah, no, I think it's absolutely incredible. And like, they're, so far it hasn't been entirely flawless, but I think that they have done a pretty good job, and they put out updates that fix all of the issues over time. But I think that all of this type of direction and hiring people like a director to oversee it all, I think can kind of help iron and smooth it all out over time. But like things like the widescreen support, like completely change the way these games can play and look. And it's really damn cool, especially when we're talking about some of the most iconic games of all time, and giving us an excuse to go back and play games that we love with like a new added thing going forward that is kind of unique to PCs, I think is fantastic. The day and date conversation, I think, is different, because the PS Plus will come day and date to that. Like, I think that is a totally siloed thing. Like, specifically, I'm talking about day and date on PC. And I think the moment that they realize that they're just going to make more money from that, not less money, it's going to start happening. And I think PlayStation is building out its, I mean, ecosystem might not even be the right word, but it's building out its IP right now in a way that they never have before with the movies and PlayStation Studios and PlayStation Productions. We have Last of Us coming to HBO. Like, they're kind of building a case to be bigger than just a console. And I think that the moment that that kind of tips over, it's going to hit a certain snowball effect where they might start looking at PC more as not just a thing that funnels people back to a console, but as, hey, here's a way for us to add more numbers to our already astronomical sales numbers. I'm sure we're going to talk about some later today with MPD stuff. But like, once they realize that they can kind of have that number, especially as we move into this era of, look, call it whatever you want to, it's still going to be a competition between Microsoft and PlayStation. And like, doesn't mean it needs to be a war, but there is that level of headlines that they are battling for. And if we're going to keep putting out headlines of, oh, first weekend player base of every Game Pass game ever is astronomical, Sony's going to want anything they can do to like be able to pump up their numbers, especially when at the end of the day, those numbers are more valuable when they are it full priced retail titles being sold to people. So if they can sell that on PlayStation and on PC, that's a win-win for Sony and it's a win-win for gamers out there.
Yeah, I'll be very interested to see like what ends up shaking out from this role. And like, obviously, I'm sure there'll be like interviews and things with like the people that end up spearheading these kind of campaigns, because I'm curious to know like what exactly does, like, there's been some conversation up front of like how they envision PC sort of being in conversation with the PS5. And a lot of it is, oh, putting on these legacy titles and like giving, you know, games a second life and, you know, also like acquiring more customers. But I'm curious as to like, the people that are like kind of going for these roles, what is their ideal vision of it? You know, if it is just optimizing PC sales growth, like, I think it's interesting that conversation of day and date for PC and console, where ultimately, yeah, you're right. Like, I'd imagine they make more money having it on more places because that's how that kind of works. But I guess it's that conversation of how are we optimizing like PC sales growth as it's maybe its own thing versus like having the console part. To what degree do we want those things together? Like, what element of it is just the bottom line versus like where they want to move forward as a company. And yeah, I think things are as they are until they aren't, which sounds like the most obvious statement in the world, but
you're right though. I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, their energy and their vibe, and that can kind of change at any time because like companies evolve, you know, like I don't think it's totally, well, actually I think it is mind-blowing that Game Pass exists, but you know, it's, no one really could have predicted the way that Xbox's identity has shifted. I think even just a few years ago, where sure, there are still the jokes of like Xbox doesn't have any games, like easy to put our exclusives on Game Pass when there's like three of them. But like ultimately, that's not what I feel like the identity and ultimate conversation around Xbox is. To me, that conversation has shifted to Game Pass and wanting to play stuff because it's on Game Pass and wanting to be on Xbox because it has Game Pass. And that conversation of Xbox being so much bigger than just that one platform and sort of just being a space to play in general. So it'll be interesting to see like how does, to what degree does PlayStation's identity evolve, and is it going toward this kind of bigger, more brand direction? I like what you bring up about the, you know, the shows and things too. Like, I was just talking yesterday in my apartment because my brother went to Universal Studios, like that was one of his gifts for his birthday. He got like a little pass to it. And he's like, man, when, and we talked about the Mario stuff that's there because I'm out in LA and they have the store already. They're still building the like area, but they already have like one of the stores. And he's like, man, I would love like a Sony park. Like, can you imagine, you know, with the, not just the IP, but also like the other media elements. And I'm like, oh my God, that'd be so cool. Because like, I went to like a PlayStation park inside of Dreams that was like a fan made one with like Spyro and stuff. And I'm like, man, that would be like such an awesome thing to see. And I think we are kind of moving towards that bigger brand identity and ecosystem for the company.
Janet, a fun story for you. Back in the day, in San Francisco at the Metreon, at the mall, it was the Sony Metreon. And in the early 2000s, like they owned the entire mall, and it was essentially a mini Sony theme park, like where they had the PlayStation store. And this predates the Nintendo store in New York or any of that stuff. And like, it was crazy. Like, that was like where they launched the PS2, and it was a whole big deal. You can go there and there's demo kiosks for all the games, but they would have people dressed up like in character, like Parappa the Rapper would be walking around. And like, it was just crazy how it really was kind of this like really early version of what a PlayStation theme park could be. And it was a blast. Like, it was, there was nothing cooler, Barrett, right, than going down to the PlayStation store, just hanging out.
Before I even moved to San Francisco, we have family out here, so we had a vacation here. So I got to see it, like, once and, like, walk through it and stuff. And then there was, like, the virtual bowling at the top floor, I think, like, way back then. Yeah, that was a cool place that I wish was still around.
Totally, totally. Anyways. I digress.
All I want to do is take a picture with like a giant mascot character. I really don't have many of those. Like, you know, I went to the Nintendo offices like 2 years ago or something. And I'm like, is Mario here? Like, can I take a picture with Mario? Like, you know, where's Mario?
Literally,
like, because my friend gave me the tour and I'm like, so, you know, where's Mario at? You know, we're in the cafeteria. I'm looking around. I see a lot of people. I don't see Mario. He was like, yeah. I mean, he really...
He's like, I'm sorry, like, Janet. Your Mario's in another headquarters.
Yeah, he's like, he really only comes out for like,
for you,
like children that are like, you know, visiting for like really specific reasons. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe next time. let's move on to 21 Raven Software QA employees will now be allowed to have a union election. This comes from Ash Parrish and Jay Peters over at The Verge. The article reads, 21 Raven Software QA employees have until May 20th to submit their ballots in a historic Video Game Industry Union vote. Today, the National Labor Relations Board, NLRB, decreed that voting for the union would commence and that the voting unit would be composed of those 21 employees against Activision Blizzard's argument that the voting unit should be open to all Rave employees. In a statement to The Verge, Activision Blizzard spokesperson Rich George said, "While we respect the NLRB process, we are disappointed that a decision could significantly impact the future of our entire studio will be of our employees. We believe a direct relationship with team members is the best path to achieving individual and company goals. We are reviewing legal options regarding a potential appeal. This is a watershed moment for these QA employees who started the journey toward unionizing back in December 2021. After a round of layoffs hit the Activision Blizzard subsidiary studio, workers staged a walkout that became a sustained strike lasting 5 weeks. At the end of the strike, workers formally organized the Game Workers Alliance, the first union in one of North America's biggest game companies. Since then, Activision Blizzard has worked to undermine these unionization efforts. It dispersed Raven QA employees across separate teams and argued that the voting unit for the pending union election should be open to all Raven employees, thereby reducing the chance for its success. It also converted over 1,000 contract and temporary QA employees to full-time and gave significant raises in pay, raises that were not extended to the QA employees. We are so proud to announce that the NLRB ruled that our unit is eligible for election, the Game Workers Alliance said in a tweet. Thank you to everyone supporting our campaign since our initial strike up until this very moment. Time for democracy. Once ballots are submitted by the deadline, the NLRB will tally the votes. A supermajority of the voting unit must vote in favor of the union for it to be officially recognized and bargaining can begin. We are pleased that after reviewing the evidence, the National Labor Relations Board rejected Raven Software Management's attempt to undermine our efforts to form a union, member of the Game Workers Alliance said in a statement Friday evening. It's now time for Raven Management to stop trying to prevent us from exercising our rights. We are looking forward to voting and winning for our union. Tim, what's your take on this?
This is the era, right? This is the movement. This is going to continue to happen. And I, you know, especially when we're talking about Activision now, I feel like with all the different teams, like we're going to start seeing a lot more of this, and it's slowly just going to start to crystallize upward, you know? But I think these are positive. It's positive momentum going on.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's definitely the fear, I think, already of the appeal, because they've already mentioned that. They're like, well, if, you know, we don't agree with this, and if it comes down to it, we're going to try to appeal it. So I definitely think that this win may not be the end all be all for even like this exact element of trying to get the union recognized. But it's a great step, and also just really impressive. I think given like the size of Raven Software QA, these employees going up and going to cast their votes. And I, you know, I imagine it's going to pass. Like they only need majority. So they only need what, like 12, something like that, like 12 members to vote yes. So we'll see what happens after this. I mean, I do think it's important to always note that a union is not a magic wand. It is a way to have a collective voice. So while, like, I think we'll definitely see plenty of examples of, I think, there still being rights issues or things that they're fighting for. Like, again, a union's not just the thing that will fix everything. It's just about getting a way to organize and cast votes and have a system at play that is more than just, hey, like, let's all try to figure this out. You know, it adds structure, because otherwise what you end up having is this kind of additional challenges, I think, to having hard conversations. Like, a union helps facilitate that because there are people that spearhead things. There are ways to vote. There are ways to be involved. You can, you know, often once it's established, when you like get added to a team, you choose whether or not, you know, you pay your dues to be added in there. So, yeah, you know, this is not the end, I think, of the struggles of QA, especially because QA, I think we know, is like a well-documented, I think, pain point within the industry in terms of getting, you know, proper hours, proper pay. Like, it is one of, I think, the most exploited elements of development, at least from like the reports that I think we've seen and heard over the years of what it's like to be a QA tester anywhere or to any degree. But yeah, and I think that's also what makes it so much cooler too. I think QA being such a, I think, overlooked and also often blamed sector of the industry, kind of like a little bit of a punching bag, for them to be able to get this kind of push and have this kind of voice is, you know, absolutely huge. And I'm excited to keep following that story and see how it goes. And yes, hopefully it is a kind of I wouldn't say beginning point, because I think we've seen a lot of these efforts already. And it was interesting, like, them writing the one of the first, like, North American, like, from the big side of things. I remember there being a story at the end of last year about a indie studio unionizing, and I can't remember the people that make Something Breakers, Beast Breaker. I don't know if I have that right. Someone, you know, codify.com/wrong for the name of that studio. But seeing that as an example of something, and how people were like talking about, oh my God, is that really the first no one else has done it? And it's like, yeah, a lot of this stuff has just not been done yet. Like, it's not been normalized. And I think in a lot of industries, you know, it's not something that is commonplace. But I'd love to see this, you know, happen everywhere across the board. And again, I don't think that would make making games no longer a grueling and many times exploitative practice, but it will at least allow for systems to be in place to protect workers and also give workers a voice. So that's my union rant as someone that also has been in a union before. Shout out to Chicago's Teachers Union. I have been in that union and it was, you know, a big deal.
There you go.
All right, moving on. Let's go ahead and talk about more stuff with Activision. Let's talk financial results. Let's go over to Brendan Sinclair at GameIndustry.biz, who writes, Activision Blizzard today reported its financial results for the first quarter of the year, showing precipitous drops at its Activision and Blizzard divisions. Company-wide revenues were down 22% year-over-year to $1.77 billion, while net bookings slid 29% to $1.48 billion. Net income for the period was down 36% to $395 million. The Activision business segment saw the greatest decline, with revenues sliding 49% to $453 million. The Call of Duty franchise saw declining bookings on console and PC thanks to underperformance of Call of Duty Vanguard and declining engagement in Call of Duty Warzone. The publisher did say Call of Duty mobile bookings were mostly unchanged compared to the previous year's first quarter. Activision saw 100 million monthly active users for the quarter, down 33% year-over-year, and the lowest since the 2019 launch of Call of Duty Mobile added a major free-to-play offering to the franchise for the first time. Blizzard revenues were down 43% to $274 million for the first quarter, with the drop blamed on, quote, product cycle timing for the Warcraft franchise. As for what could boost the numbers in the near future, the company said it will reveal details about Warcraft's first mobile product within weeks, while the free-to-play mobile Diablo Immortal is set for an international launch June 2nd, complete with a PC version with crossplay launching in open beta that day. Like Activision, Blizzard's engagement numbers were similarly lagging, down 19% year-over-year to 22 million, the lowest total since Activision Blizzard began reporting specific monthly active users totals by division back in the second quarter of 2016. Tim, is this cause for concern, or do you think this is an example of things getting worse before they get better?
I think there's a lot going on. I think that we would need to look at kind of year over year over year over year over year results to really kind of see like how worrying this all is, because these are ridiculous drops, and they use precipitous, which I'm always a big fan of, in terms of revenue coming in and all of that. But like, we're still talking about absolutely astronomical, ridiculous numbers that very few, if anyone in the industry, is even getting close to. So with that, it's kind of the thing of like, cool, it is bad news for sure, because for Activision, because it's not up. But there was a lot of stories going on in the last week about like, we need to look at success not as this like thing that if we're not always more successful than we used to be, we're not successful anymore, right? It's like the just because you didn't do as good as you did your best year, it's like, okay, but are you still doing good enough? That's the question to me, is this good enough to Activision? And I'm not sure that they're going to be happy with it. They're also in a very tumultuous period right now with a lot of potential change-ups happening. And whether or not the Microsoft stuff actually goes through, we are looking at an Activision that is being called out from every single angle, and that's not going to stop anytime soon. So what's that going to do to the shareholders? Like, what expectations are they going to have? And what does this news, even if it's not bad news, potentially, if it's not the worst news of it going these numbers, What does that paired with all of the headlines do to the shareholders, do to the people that actually are kind of in control of all of this? That is what I'm most interested in.
Yeah, I think it definitely does. Even if it's not like, I like what you brought up with the like it not being your best year doesn't mean that it is like a failure of a year. And I do think we often like look at if you're not increasing, like that is a, you know, inherently a negative story for something to be performing worse, even if it's not that big of a deal, or if it's, you know, kind of a known kind of growing pain of, I think, switching up how you roll out a franchise or just like kind of shifting directions on certain elements or trying new things that may or may not be successful. But yeah, I mean, I think it does speak to part of the darkness surrounding Activision Blizzard, not just in the, I think, moral and business elements, but also in like how the performance is going. And yeah, it's definitely like a dark time. I think this will be something that we end up looking back to for, you know, the inevitable, like, oh, things are up better than they've been in whatever many years. So like, I think these things come in waves. And yeah, I think especially once we get down to like the NPD and stuff too, it is insane thinking about like, I don't, you know, spoilers for like 10 minutes from now, but thinking about like how massively successful some games are and then how Call of Duty is still more successful than that, despite being like one of the like weaker iterations of it. Like, there are definitely levels to this. And Activision Blizzard, it's interesting because I don't want to say they're like too big to fail, because I don't think that's true for anybody. And obviously, like when there were talks around the, you know, sale of Activision Blizzard, one of the things came up were like not being able to get maybe a certain number that they would have wanted to get for the company. And, you know, what that speaks to both in terms of the public reception of it and maybe even in terms of like the product to a degree. But yeah, like ultimately, Activision Blizzard's worst years are better than many companies could ever possibly conceive of or imagine. So I think it's going to take a lot for this to be cause for concern on a bigger scale. And I imagine that in the next, I don't know, number of years, things will be on the upswing. It'll be interesting specifically like with Call of Duty and like what they're going to do with that, whether or not that, you know, the next iteration will be like super successful or like more critically acclaimed. I do think around like Vanguard, even this data aside, like anecdotally, there wasn't much conversation around it. And I think a lot of that was because of like the general reception of Activision Blizzard and kind of just like, okay, well, I mean, I can miss this and not miss out on much. But I think in the coming years, we'll see that sort of shift over. But for now, remember, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Hey, computer people, announced at CES and available now, the latest generation of Razer Blades feature all new NVIDIA GeForce RTX 30 series GPUs and up to an RTX 3080 Ti featuring a suite of cutting-edge features to improve gameplay, including NVIDIA Reflex. NVIDIA Reflex delivers the ultimate competitive advantage, the lowest latency, the best responsiveness. Get the competitive edge you need at sub-25 milliseconds. And I asked the one, the only, the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez, is that good? And he said, ooh-wee, sub-25 milliseconds is great. And I said, that's fantastic. Acquire targets faster, react quicker, and increase aim precision in the most competitive games such as Apex Legends, Fortnite, Call of Duty, and more. Learn more about the Razer Blades powered by NVIDIA GPUs with NVIDIA Reflex technology at Razer.com. When I needed a printer, I turned to Twitter, and so many of you told me Brother was the way to go. For more than a year now, Jen and I have been using our Brother printer for immigration paperwork, baby paperwork, and a million other things. It's been great, but you know what printers need? Ink. And while it used to be a hassle to get ink, Brother's Refresh Easy print subscription has made it easy. The Brother Refresh Easy print subscription service is a printing plan that is based on the number of pages you print. You choose a monthly plan based on your print volume needs, color, black and white, and all print for one monthly cost. And instead of having to remember to buy replacement ink cartridges, your printer does the work for you through an intelligent ink and toner level monitoring feature that tracks the remaining amount of ink or toner and orders it before you run out. The Brother Refresh Easy print subscription service is a convenient, worry-free way to print. Each plan is flexible, and you can change or cancel your subscription anytime. So what are you waiting for? Stop running out of ink when you need it most and put your printer to work with the Brother Refresh Easy print subscription service by signing up at brother-usa.com/printwithrefresh. Again, that's brother-usa.com/printwithrefresh to sign up for the Brother Refresh Easy print subscription service and stop worrying about your ink levels. All right, guys, let's chat skincare. If your skincare routine is basically you washing your face in the shower with that one shower gel that you've been using since high school, then it's time to level up your skincare game. Because as it turns out, that regular body wash you've been using that you thought was good enough is probably damaging your skin. But thanks to Lumen, you can drop that bottle of 3-in-1 and start using products that actually take care of your skin. With Lumen, you get the highest quality products. All their products aim to help with those stubborn acne scars, under eye circles, wrinkles, sun damage, dry skin, oily skin, you name it, it's all there. Starting with Lumen is easy. All you have to do is take a 2-minute quiz on their website and they'll tell you exactly which routine is best for your skincare needs. G has been using the charcoal face wash and charcoal face scrub and she feels so fresh afterward. She has dry skin, so especially during the winter, it's nice to have that hydration and exfoliation. Also, she's a big fan of the really subtle citrus smell. Level up your skincare game with Lumen Skin today. Go to lumenskin.com/kindoffunny to get your free trial of Lumen's products. That's L-U-M-I-N skin.com/kindoffunny for a free trial. lumenskin.com/kindoffunny.
And let's get into the NPD with Matt Piscatella over on Twitter, which may or may not soon be owned by Elon Musk, but that's not gaming news. It's just something that's been on my mind all day. So let's talk about it. We got March 2022 US NPD thread that Matt breaks down here. Starting with March 2022, consumer spending across video game hardware, content, and accessories declined 15% versus a year ago to $4.9 billion. Declines were seen across all major categories of spend. First quarter of 2022, spending fell 8% versus quarter of 2021 to $13.9 billion. Continued console hardware supply challenges combined with a return to experiential spending are likely drivers of the quarter one declines. Video game hardware dollar sales dropped 24% compared to a year ago. First quarter hardware sales reached $1.2 billion, a 15% decline versus 2021's first quarter. Does this surprise you to see that spending has gone down across the board in gaming? And then we'll kind of jump back and forth to some other breakout things, and then I also have a game for you to play, Tim, about NPD stuff. So
love that. No, I'm not surprised. I think this is kind of just how these things go, especially when you look at the launch of the PS5 and the Series X and the first quarter last year. There's a lot more going on than I think there is this year in terms of like the hardware sales and all that, because there was new hardware out, right? So things are still constantly selling out whenever they're in stock. So I don't think that there's any downside to where this is at currently. It's just kind of the state of the world we're in still. And it's going to just kind of be that trickle effect of them just selling as much as they can make consistently, but it's not going to have that bulk amount that we saw back then.
Yeah, I think especially too, like in the, I guess, earlier days of the pandemic, even though last year wasn't exactly like the earliest of days, like we saw that big spike in gaming in general. And I think even just like anecdotally, there was a lot of people getting into gaming for the first time, getting back into gaming, deciding, hey, like now's the time for me to finally get the Switch. Do I get the Lite? Do I not? And those then the OLED came out. Like we had all those kind of conversations, I think, around all of that. And I think too, even for people that were already, you know, into gaming and spent already a lot of their time there, it was maybe a time to, hey, now that I'm stuck at home and I'm not doing a lot, maybe now is the time to finally do some extra upgrades to like finally get that hardware that I've been needing to get whatever accessory. So I think this definitely speaks a little bit more, you know, as Matt points out in his thread, towards things shifting back to how they normally are rather than thing, oh my God, things are in a decline. Gaming is dying. No one wants to play anymore. I think we just saw like a really big influx, especially in the last like few years of people getting into spending a lot more on gaming. And I think, you know, I'm sure at some point we'll hit another wave that we can point to some other random occurrence for like why things have sort of spiked up. But I think this kind of just is part of it. Now let's talk a little bit about like hardware stuff. We got Xbox Series was the best-selling hardware platform of both March 2022 and the first quarter in dollars, while Switch led in both time periods in unit sales. So that's kind of speaking to, again, that disparity between, like, the cost of, you know, the Series line versus, like, the Switch pushing more units, but, you know, maybe the dollar amount isn't as much because there's stuff like, you know, the Lite and other options there. And then we have Xbox hardware unit and dollar sales in March 2022 set a new all-time March high for the platform. Previously, Xbox bests were set in March 2011 in terms of units and March 2014 in terms of dollars. Tim, do you feel like we're really in Xbox's era right now?
I think we're in video games era right now. Like, I think that's the thing. I don't think that I think Xbox, PlayStation, and Nintendo have all proven their ownership of us a lane in the industry and are just continuing to drive down that lane full speed. And when we see what Xbox has built out with Game Pass over the last couple of years, they've proven their value to so many people. Now it's just about getting them, getting the people that don't have access to it one way or another, access to it. So I think they've done an excellent job of getting their hardware out as quickly as possible and having the options of the S or the X kind of really make it a no-brainer to people that are interested in video games and that have at least a certain amount of disposable income. It's like, yeah, you probably should have access to Game Pass some way because there is just such immense value there if you are interested in video games whatsoever. But I do think that when we look at this, it's like, this is just good news for the industry as a whole because we're just continuing to raise these numbers. And the more platforms out there, the more potential for games to make money, which means more dope games are going to be made, better.
At what point do you think PlayStation needs to be concerned about like not being kind of a part of these sort of high figure conversations in terms of like best, you know, hardware sales in terms of dollars or units? Because we see both Xbox and Nintendo represented in kind of their different lanes of like, okay, well, obviously Switch is, you know, cheaper, so it doesn't, it's not too surprising that's going to out unit it. You know, at what point is that a concern? Obviously, we know it's just because it's hard to get PS5s even in stock. Like, I think if there was more available, we might see these numbers be a little bit different. But at what point is that going to be concerning, do you think? And like, what do you think that might have an impact on with like PSVR 2 coming up?
I don't think at all ever. Like, when we look at the numbers, like PlayStation, again, the sell-through rate is 100%. Like, if they're on store shelves, they will not be by the end of the day. So I think that they are doing their best with the state of the world of getting them on shelves, and they are selling. And when these month-to-month-to-month numbers are important, but what's more important is when PlayStation comes out and is like, hey, last time we talked, it was at this amount of million. Now it's, we're adding 20 million to that. You know what I mean? Like, that's just going to keep happening. And then they have the games to back it up. And we're seeing these game sales with just astronomical attach rates for full price PlayStation 4 and 5 titles. Like, they're sitting pretty. They have nothing to be concerned about.
Okay, Tim. Do you want me to read through like other, you know, stats about, oh, this game sold this, whatever, highest, whatever? Or do we want to jump straight to the game I have for you? I'm going to go through both regardless, but which order do you want to do it in?
The game.
Okay, cool. So this is, I don't have a good name for it because I'm not blessing. This is just top 20 selling games in March 2022. There's a lot of 20s there. Someone come up with something catchy for that. There's something there.
2020 vision.
More
the top 20 of 2022. Top 20 of 2022.
This is why Barrett is consistently the most underrated person I have ever met in my life. Always bringing the heat. So I want you to just get through as many as you can. They are both physical and digital, though I will say, for some reason, the Nintendo ones don't count digital sales. I don't think that's really going to change much for you, but like, just so you're aware. So just start throwing games out there. This is March 2022.
Yeah. Okay. So Elden Ring.
Yes.
Is going to be very high.
Number one.
My boy Kirby. He's going to be very high as well.
Yes.
I think, especially because it's multi-plat now, MLB The Show going to be very high.
Yep. Number four.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look at me. Hold on. Am I missing?
You're missing two and then the other ones. But
Yeah. What would number two be? Okay. Well, Mario Kart 8 is always on it. And I imagine it will be higher because of the DLC than it has been. Maybe a couple
Mario
spots.
Mario Kart 8's there. It's at eight.
At eight? Okay, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Eight for eight.
I mean, Call of Duty Vanguard will be there, and all, you know, there's the GTAs, yep, all those guys. But like, what is that number
GTA
two?
GTA isn't on there, actually.
Oh, really?
A little surprising.
Oh, Legends Arceus.
Yes, number six.
Yeah, Smash Ultimate's probably there too.
Yeah, 18.
Dying Nintendo. Okay, that's getting a little low. What is that second one? Hold on. What games
have, like, who's still buying Smash Ultimate? They're like, now is the time to really get into this.
I'm gonna roll the dice on this one, but I'm hoping it's top 10. Gran Turismo 7.
Yep, number two.
Whoa, number two.
Yep, number one and number two are
new PlayStation Studios.
Really specific games, like that have like a that have found like mass success.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, should I play Gran Turismo 7? Like, but I'm not a, you know, I'm not like a car person like that. And like, no one I know really is, but like, obviously a lot of people are car people.
Yeah.
Because this is freaking number two, which we'll talk about a little bit more. But yeah, like it's been insane. And I'm like, damn. And to think I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to take this in my draft. I messed up not taking it. It also was super critically acclaimed too. I think it's like sitting well in the 80s on Metacritic. Yeah. Anyway,
since then though, with, you know, the fan retention and stuff like that with all of their systems in place with the currency.
Yeah. So far you have 8 of them. We don't have to go to get all 20. Just go until you feel like you're a little tired.
I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but that might be all the new stuff. Like now we're going to start going back. I know I named a bunch of old stuff too, but like Horizon's there.
Yep.
Not that that's that old, but.
I'll double check. I think Horizon? You might still be missing some new stuff. It's number 5.
Ooh.
Let me pull up the. Oh, I have it already. You're missing 1, 2, 4. I know I just jumped numbers. 5. 5 new things are missing.
Wow. Tiny Tina?
Yeah. 11.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. Fill in the rest.
what game did Blessing just beat?
Aegis Rim?
No, did he really? Did he beat Aegis Rim?
He hasn't beat it. He's split.
I'm like, what?
They just beat Kirby. I don't know. I don't know what did he just beat.
Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin, because he's a fucking nerd.
Okay. That's cool.
That's number 10. What game is streaming after this here?
Oh, WWE 2K22.
Yeah, number 7. Above Mario Kart 8. More people are beating each other up in the ring than driving. And that's not actually how the math works because there's a ton of users on Mario Kart 8. But, you know, there's something there. For other, like, classic hits that are always on there, FIFA 22, 13. Madden NFL 22, 15. There are, and then, like, this one I feel like I wasn't expecting. Assassin's Creed Valhalla sitting at number 20. We also have.
It just had a DLC, I think, recently.
Mm. Yeah. Oh gosh, what was the name of that too?
The beginning of Ragnarok or some shit or whatever.
I forgot. Yeah, but that did drop recently. That's a good call out.
I want to talk about Gran Turismo a little bit. Like it's I think really important and interesting to keep in mind games like Gran Turismo 7 because back in the day on PlayStation, Gran Turismo 1, 2, 3, those were and even I would say to an extent 4 were like prestige premier titles in the PlayStation lineup that sold millions of copies and were like the gold standard in terms of sales for PlayStation. Like they are up there in the top tens of the highest selling PlayStation games of all time lists. But it's just crazy how Sony has restructured itself and redefined what PlayStation games are so intensely in the PlayStation 4 generation where we get all the hits that we talk about now, like The Last of Us, Uncharted, and Horizons, et cetera, Spider-Man's, God of War, like blah, blah. There's so many of these, right? And they even just like blew the roof off and are now just these crazy 20 million expectation lifetime sales numbers, right? It's nuts that Gran Turismo is still coming in and selling super well at that number two slot there. But it's like just... It's really important to look at what PlayStation has where they can just drop these big ones that like we're all looking for, but even their niche community stuff, which I would say at this point, racing games like Gran Turismo are less of a mainstream appeal that used to have back in the day when there were just less gamers. Now that there are more gamers out there, the fact that they have a niche that is that valuable is incredibly important.
Yeah, I think especially because that's like I think hard niche to dominate in the sense that the people that are into that know it really well and they have like I wouldn't say high expectations but like it's difficult I think to impress with like a sim of that genre because it's like going for realism and that like you know for those who don't know it's like very different than like a Forza Horizon, you know, it's more like Forza Motorsport is a more apt comparison I think for Gran Turismo. So yeah, to see it have like such massive success and like everyone I know that has played it or that talks about it or that's reviewed it is like, oh, this is amazing. This is one of my favorite games of the year. And like, I've been kind of wondering, I'm like, should I have like requested, should I have like gone in and given this a shot? Again, it's a very specific kind of game that I don't think like my, you know, like or dislike would honestly have much to say about the game itself because I think it might just be a taste thing. But I'm like, I kind of feel like I want to try this out because I think it's just garnered that much attention that I'm like, clearly there's something here that even within the niche has found some level of mass appeal. And, you know, like there's something about this game that's really like speaking to the community right now. And I honestly wasn't expecting it. And like, shout out to that team for mass success. I mean, to be behind like number two, just behind Elden Ring is like really insane. Obviously, again, this is just within a singular month, but I wouldn't have predicted that it would have done so well when the year first started. Other ones to shout out for the common, always there, Minecraft, 14. Ghostwire Tokyo is there at 12, which I'm a little bit surprised by. We got Triangle Strategy at 16.
Wow.
Shout out to the demo, the free demo. I played a little bit of it. And I did like it, but it's like that thing where you're staring down the barrel and the game is so long and like, I'm bad at strategy and I don't want to read all the stuff. Like, maybe I'll get back to it. But I was into that one for the little bit I played. So, Mario Party Superstars, 17. Animal Crossing New Horizons at 19. So those are the top 20, which up from the top, we got Elden Ring, Gran Turismo, Kirby, MLB The Show, Horizon 2, Pokemon Legends Arceus, WWE, Mario Kart 8, Call of Duty Vanguard, Stranger of Paradise, Final Fantasy Origin, Tiny Tina's Wonderlands, Ghostwire Tokyo, FIFA 22, Minecraft, Madden 22, Triangle Strategy, Mario Party Superstars, Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, and Animal Crossing New Horizons, plus Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which I don't know why I read it that way. It makes it sound like it's one game, which would be an awesome game if they combined the two of those. You know, a little bit of crafting, a little bit of murder. To round out the MPD discussion, I do want to shout out some more highlights regarding these games. A lot of it is kind of stuff we just touched on. So Elden Ring repeated as the best-selling game of the month as dollar sales experienced double-digit percentage dollar sales growth compared to its February 2022 launch. Elden Ring ranked first in dollar sales among tracked titles across PlayStation, Xbox, and PC. Elden Ring remains the best-selling game of 2022 year-to-date and now ranks second over the 12-month period ending March 2022, with dollar sales trailing only of those of Call of Duty Vanguard, which again speaks to Vanguard's immense success despite being like one of the weaker I think offerings that have come in recent years. Gran Turismo 7 debuted as the number two best-selling game of March 2022 while also ranking second on PlayStation platforms. Gran Turismo set a new all-time launch month dollar sales record for Gran Turismo franchise at launch, and new releases again accounted for half of the top 16 best-selling titles of March 2022, which I think speaks to again the strength of the year. I know we always have like the conversation on like what's a strong year, what's a weak year, like who cares like at the end of the day, but I do think that speaks to the fact that this year is really overwhelming with how much there is to play and what high quality there is of stuff to play. Even just in this first like quarter, I have played so many amazing games and there's still like so many extra gaps to fill, and then there's like a good amount left on the calendar too. I mean, I know we're in backlog season now, but yeah, a lot left to look forward to.
Yeah, and I mean, just want to say it, like, shout out to Elden Ring. From Software, getting this win is massive and it is so well deserved. And, you know, the games have sold well, but this is a new level and it's awesome to see people kind of like rally behind it. And to see, you know, people like Tam and Andy and Bless and all them that have been like shouting it from the rooftops for so long to like have this, I think is just super awesome because it's a super high quality game and it's getting the results.
I'm just shocked that many people are good enough at those kind of games, because I'm like, well, then again, I have the game and I'm not good. So maybe it's like, maybe there's also people like me who just have it and like tried it for a little bit and then put it down. But yeah, it's insane for something so lengthy and specific to be so immensely popular. And yeah, I think it's just totally going to sweep, I think, all award stuff too. Yeah, it's been crazy seeing its success. And I think that success is only going to continue as time goes on, because that game's also massive. Like, so many people I know that are playing it and talking about it on Twitter still are like, I'm so far into this game and there's so much of the map left and so much stuff to do, and I haven't seen people get tired of it all, and there's just still like more things being discovered and like fans doing stuff. And yeah, I think it's definitely going to be a conversation point for the rest of the year as people continue to play through it, platinum it, start it, replay it, and everything in between.
I will say, Janet, with the three just looking on PSN profiles, so this is like a very small sector of the actual audience, for the three different trophies of like endings, 40% have one ending, 41% have another, 43% have another, and granted, a good amount of those are probably people getting the platinum and stuff like that, but that is still a good chunk of people who are like actually like rolling credits and stuff like that. And having never beaten a Souls game before, this was the first one I had ever rolled credits on. So it's not about the skill. It's about, you know, knowing where to, you know, level up and shit.
motion of the ocean.
I feel like that's its own skill. maybe. I don't know. Maybe you're more skilled than you give yourself credit for, though, Barrett.
No, Barrett. For Souls games, there is always a wall that I hit. Always. Mm. And it's always like 2 or 3 hours into the game, and I get the fuck out of there. But this one, I found the cliff with all those big red boys, killed them over and over again for like 5 hours, leveled up hella. It was great. So,
yeah. Congratulations. But me being Elden Ring is so far away because I probably never will. If I want to know what's coming to mom and grub shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
For all today, I just want to shout out an update over to, Gran Turismo 7, getting 3 new cars and an updated 24-hour layout of Spa Fracourchamps. I have no idea how to say that or if I said it right. I tried looking it up. It's French. With patch 1.13 out today. And then some new dates for y'all. I want to highlight again, I mentioned already, but Diablo Immortal coming to PC and iOS/Android on June 2nd. And then, Tim, you pointed this out. The first content update for Sifu is coming out. It'll have a special gift for all deluxe holders called the Young Man Suit. It's a cosmetic thing. And then tune in tomorrow for the 2022 Sifu game content update roadmap. Tim, what is your hype level for this?
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Like, idea that it's a content update roadmap. I'm like, okay, those words sound good to me. I hope it's not just a couple outfits here and there. I hope we're getting some DLC. I think we're going to get some DLC. I really feel like this game, it totally would make sense to add extreme value by just adding another level. And I know that they got it in them. I know they could do it. This game's been successful. People fucking love it. It's interesting because this content update here, I might get your wrongs on this, but I know that there was kind of like a minor controversy with this whole digital deluxe special thing that they were supposed to give, and then people didn't get it because it wasn't ready. So I think this is just them kind of be like, here's the thing. That's the thing that we promised, but tomorrow we're going to give you like the actual updated news of stuff. But it also could just be, here's a costume. You'll be able to play as somebody else, but it doesn't really affect the gameplay at all. I don't know. Like, that would be the downside. The upside to me would be you're getting more fucking Sifu. And I really, really hope that that is the case.
I really want the, which was, mentioned earlier, them kind of adding like additional like difficulty settings or just like additional adjustments to the gameplay. That's what I'm looking for, because like, I don't want to get good. Tim, your story of getting good at Sifu after being like pretty not good, is it, while inspiring, I'm like, or I could just wait for them to get me out of my own problem, which I imagine the game will still be challenging even with like whatever settings they add. But I'm like, I just want a couple additional supports, a couple bumpers on the bowling lane of Sifu, just to kind of help out a little bit, would go a long way for me reinstalling that, because I would like to see it through. And I do think the combat has a lot of like really cool layers. I'm just like, look, I have to be my best self, and she doesn't show up very often. I'm not gonna lie, I don't think she's coming today. You know what I mean? Like, level one, oh yeah, we're doing great. We're coming out super young. Level two, when I texted Blessing and I'm like, hey, is there another shortcut I don't know about? And he's like, no, you're good, just go. I'm like, now this is where, and that's where my story came to an end. So I'd like to go back and see more of it. As far as your wrongs, we have Slothing Out pointing out that a union vote for Raven requires a supermajority, not just a majority, which apparently a supermajority is 2/3. So thank you for the correction on that, that being more than half. And then I'm not going to do the math on that because I'm bad at math. And then the AC Valhalla DLC was called Dawn of Ragnarok, was the name of it.
Dawn beginning. From Kebab. It's the same fucking thing. That's barely
the start, the morning time, snooze hours of Ragnarok. Yes, the Dawn of Ragnarok. And then that's basically it. Nano also shouts out that Tiny Tina's Wonderlands DLC is now out? Again, there's no you're wronging the you're wrong, so I just kind of have to put a little bit of faith in there. Tomorrow/this week's host, we have Tuesday, we got Greg and Gary Witta. Wednesday, we have Blessing and myself. Thursday, we have Greg and Bless. And then Friday, we have Bless and Tim. Again, if you're watching live on Twitch, we have the... The April Anarchy starting off next up. And if you miss that, you can catch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. We're each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those who are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. So stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.